Major League Baseball is trying to work its way back onto the field with the potential to be the only major sport playing games for an entire month. But can the league overcome a dispute between players and owners over, you guessed it, money?
Seth, you and I sit here, we talk, this makes sense to us. I know it makes sense to the people involved, but they sort of can't get out of their own histories in their own heads.
That's Ken Rosenthal, who covers Major League Baseball for The Athletic, and he breaks down all the major issues on today's pod. I'm Seth Davis from The Athletic, and this is The Comeback, COVID-19, and the Return of Sports. And we'll hear from Ken Rosenthal in a moment, but first, let's get you caught up on some of the events happening around the world of sports. This is going to be a pivotal week for the NBA. The league's Board of Governors is expected to vote on Thursday, hopefully to approve a plan that would see games resuming on July the 31st. Shams Charania from The Athletic reports that there are four formats currently being discussed. 16 teams going directly into the playoffs, 20 teams with a group stage play, 22 teams, and they will determine seeding followed by a play-in tournament, or using all 30 teams who would complete a 72-game regular season, then have a play-in tourney going into the postseason. Now, from what we're all hearing, it's unlikely that all 30 teams are going to be involved in this, but if the NBA's Board of Governors approve this plan, it will move back to the Players Association and hopefully move forward. And some interesting news coming out of high school sports. Iowa has become the first state in the country to allow high school athletes to return to the field. Baseball and softball practice in Iowa's high school started today, but under some guidelines. Dugouts will be closed during practices. Any pitcher who blows on his or her hands will have to sanitize to be sure that the ball is not infected. And most draconian of all, no spitting sunflower seeds. Tell you what, that'd be a deal breaker for me. Games are expected to start in Iowa in 2 weeks. Now we turn to Major League Baseball. Ken Rosenthal reported for The Athletic over the weekend that the Players Union has submitted its proposal to the owners. The proposal calls for a 114-game season. Now that's an increase from the 82-game season that was previously agreed upon. The season would start on June the 30th and end on Halloween. The increase in games was proposed to counter the owners' offer to resume the season, but with drastically limited play. We now await the owner's response, but the clock is ticking if Major League Baseball wants to get back on the field by the end of the month. Ken, thanks for being on the pod today. Anything surprise you about what the players proposed?
Not really. It was a little bit more extensive than I thought it would be. I thought they'd just ask for their salaries, the full prorated salaries that they've agreed on, ask for an extended schedule. I did not expect them to ask for opt-out language for players who don't want to play or at high risk, though certainly that's been something on their mind. So no, the proposal did not really surprise me. No, it does not surprise me that the owners don't like it. But at some point, they're going to have to start speaking the same language. I know it's tough for them, Seth, but it's going to have to happen.
Well, there's so much frustration and consternation. It's kind of a sign of the times, but it does feel like there's just so much more mistrust and acrimony between owners and players in baseball than these other sports. We see that, especially in the NBA and the NHL. I mean, they're tough conversations, but they seem to be more on the same page. Is that a fair reading of the situation?
Yes, that's a fair reading. Ran that by Major League Baseball people in the commissioner's office. They would say, well, those leagues have a salary cap system. They share revenue with their players, and therefore there's a partner. Baseball does not have that system. That said, that line of thinking to me is an excuse. The relationship does not have to be as bad as it is. And both parties are to blame for that. I don't know that there's any question about it. And it does not surprise me one bit that they're sitting here at loggerheads with the clock ticking, because this has been the way it's been with these guys for years. Really, almost going back to Marvin Miller, it's ebbed, it's flowed. Sometimes it's been better than others. For a while, it was better in baseball. Since the strike in 94-95, there were a lot of good years. But I would say since the 2016 CBA, which was widely perceived as a win for the owners, there has been a lot of mistrust and just bad feelings between the two.
So when we talk about a lack of trust, Ken, obviously we're talking about the financials of moving forward. The owners are claiming they're going to lose money by playing games. First of all, is that true? Why is it true? And if it is, why would they even want to play?
I don't know if it's true. I have a hard time believing it's true, but without public access to the books, and we're not going to get that because these are private companies, they don't have to make their books public. It's impossible to know the veracity of the ownership claims on the way money will flow or not flow. The union says it's absolutely not true that they will lose money playing game after game, but that's counting on the postseason money. They're saying that if the postseason is played, Major League Baseball will certainly make money. And baseball basically says in response, well, we don't know that the postseason is going to be played. There might be a second wave of the virus. There might be all kinds of things that happen to disrupt it. So it's a question about what is valid and what is not. But again, that's hard for me on the outside. I have my concerns and doubts about the ownership claims, but can I say I know for sure? Absolutely not.
So part of this proposal, Ken, is the players are offering to defer their salaries in case the postseason is canceled. That strikes me in this environment, especially, as the kind of thing that maybe you wait for the owners to propose as opposed to offering it themselves. Maybe a little bit surprised that they went that route?
No, because they know for a fact that the owners do not want to pay their full prorated salaries. They want a second reduction on top of the one that they agreed to in March, the pro rata. So given that, the offer of deferrals, if the postseason is canceled, and only if, is something of an olive branch. Now, the good thing about that from my perspective is it gives you the foundation, or gives the two sides the foundation, to perhaps build on that and take that and say, okay, how are we going to do this? Now, the owners have said privately, they don't want any part of deferrals because then it bleeds into 21, 22, 23, and just compromises them in those years, as well as them being, of course, compromised in this year. But at some point, these two sides are taking intractable positions. They're going to have to find some middle ground. Deferrals offers the possibility of middle ground. And I'm sure, well, hopeful, I guess, would be the better word, that there are other areas as well.
You mentioned this agreement they had in March. It seemed like they had all of this worked out a couple of months ago. How come that agreement can't just be the framework right now moving forward?
Well, as Jason Stark wrote in The Athletic last week, these two sides cannot even agree upon what they agreed upon. That's kind of the problem here. And that agreement had language in it that the owners say, MLB says, allowed for the revisiting of salaries if games were played with no fans. It discussed the good faith negotiations regarding economic feasibility that would take place if games were played without fans. The union's position is no. A deal's a deal. That's not what that means, etc. So that is why we are back at it with this. And of course, the other reason we're back at it is the health and safety that they have to account for. And baseball issued a 67-page proposal on those protocols alone, knowing that that was only a starting point. Things have changed, and the two things that need to be resolved, economics and health and safety.
So what's the next step here? The ball is now in the owner's court, to mix our sporting metaphors. When are we going to hear something from them, and what do you think their answer is going to be? They're not going to agree to all of these things, but what do you think is going to be their counter move?
They will make a counter proposal, I expect. And the counter proposal maybe will move them a little bit off their initial proposal, which was not even acknowledged by the union in their proposal. And time is wasting. They have, I would say, Seth, until the end of next week, more likely the beginning of next week, if they're going to get a deal and play around July 4th. The longer it goes, the more difficult it becomes to play in that time frame. You can still play, but you're going to need about 30 days from the time of the agreement to play, just to get players to camp, get some of them back in the country, and also hold a second spring training. It's going to be probably 3 weeks or so. So there is not much time here, and they need to stop talking through each other or at each other and talk with each other.
And so if it's a big if they can iron out this financial piece, there's the actual execution of the games. And you talk about health and safety. The NBA is talking about putting everybody in Orlando. The NHL is talking about two cities and having two different hubs for all of their teams. What's Major League Baseball talking about?
As many home parks as possible. And this is a question people have about their plan. Ideally, you probably want to restrict the number of places you are, like the NBA is doing, and keep players together and basically just kind of keep everybody under one roof doing the same things or similar things, obviously. Baseball sees it differently. Obviously, their season is starting. It's not ending. And it's a little bit of a different scenario in that respect. And there's also some political pressure here from each of the states that have teams. They want to see some normalcy return. They believe baseball will help bring that. But from a health and safety standpoint, some people I've talked to have really questioned this aspect of the plan.
Any talk at all about having fans in these games, even in a reduced number?
Yes. We've heard already Texas say that games can be played to 25% capacity, professional sports games. That will be a starting point, certainly in Texas. Other states, it's going to depend on the virus. And we all hear that, and it's almost a cliche at this time, but that's the truth. Even in New York, which has been the hardest hit, there is a hope that games will be played with fans at some point. Maybe not 100% capacity, maybe only 10 to 20% capacity with social distancing. But there is that goal, that expectation, that hope, same as in California.
You mentioned that part of this proposal is players, they want the opportunity to opt out for health reasons, if there are underlying conditions or family-related issues. That seems to me something that we've very hard for owners to reject. Am I right?
Yes. Otherwise, you look what? Cold-hearted and just insensitive. And obviously, if you're a player who is not high risk, a normal player, and you opt out, you are losing your pay. And the union's proposal says you keep your service time. I'm sure the owners won't like that very much. And they might have to negotiate some kind of compromise there. But for high-risk players, they would get pay and service time. And high-risk players, they can fall into any number of categories. I wrote about one at one point, a guy named David Dahl with the Rockies, outfielder. He lost his spleen. And a spleen is something that gives a person a lot of help with immunities. He's a guy that he does want to play, but this proposal that the union has made would cover someone like him.
One of the things that people are talking about and frustrated with is if this happens on time, you're talking about Major League Baseball completely owning the month of July. Now, we've seen whether it's the Last Dance documentary or that golf match. I mean, people are watching NFL quarterbacks play golf in record numbers just because they're dying for something. So the idea that baseball could have an entire month to itself is a great opportunity. Do you think they really understand how great of an opportunity that is?
Seth, I don't know how they cannot understand that. It's clear as day. And also their television contracts sort of dictate it. The TBS deal starts July 5th. They have games in the second half and then, of course, through the playoffs. ESPN has the NBA, and I'm sure ESPN would love nearly a month, of full programming, baseball programming, before the NBA even starts. Fox is a little bit different. They don't really care. They just want baseball as soon as possible. But it's obviously in baseball's best interest to come, and what a great time to do it around the 4th of July. Seth, you and I sit here, we talk, this makes sense to us. I know it makes sense to the people involved, but they sort of can't get out of their own histories in their own heads.
As people are saying, only Major League Baseball could screw this up. I want to end by switching gears a little bit, slightly related front. We saw this story really still developing today where the Washington Nationals tried to limit the stipend pay for their minor league players. There was some blowback to that, and at least they recognized their error and have said that they're going to reverse that decision. But they've already cut 40 minor league players to save costs. The Oakland A's said last week they're not going to pay their minor leaguers. The Kansas City Royals seem to be taking the opposite view of we're going to take care of our own, especially the minor leaguers who, you know, we all know they beat the bushes. They live paycheck to paycheck. They don't make the kind of money that major leaguers do and certainly that the owners do. Is this just going to be the new normal? Why are the minor leaguers the ones who seem to be on the front lines in terms of feeling the pain financially about from what's happened?
Well, actually, they're not on the front lines because most teams have made cuts of some kind, pay cuts, furloughs. They've taken actions to deal with their front offices and player development staffs, business staffs, all kinds of things. Minor leaguers just happen to be in the news right now, but they've been in the news consistently because baseball wants to reduce the number of minor league teams. There was a proposal made to limit them by about 42 teams. This was going on even before the pandemic. Now, as far as paying minor leaguers, it's a little bit of a separate issue. With the Nationals, they said they would pay their minor leaguers $300 a week, where most teams are paying $400. So the Nationals players basically came up and said, that's ridiculous, we'll take care of it. And then the team said, oh, okay, we better not do this. The Royals, what's most interesting about them is what their general manager, Dayton Moore, said. And for me, it was the quote of the shutdown from baseball's perspective. He said this is about growing the game, that minor leaguers, they go back into their communities when they're done playing. Most of them don't reach the majors, but they become coaches and they help kids and they bring the game forward. They actually push it forward. This is something that I think baseball loses sight of when it's talking about every last dollar and this kind of thing. having minor leagues and having a minor league system, all right, it's not going to necessarily make you money directly. Big problem for people in professional sports when they're not making money directly. But does it help grow your product? Yeah, it does. And again, I would encourage people to go look at that quote, Dayton Moore of the Kansas City Royals. Just Google it, and minor leaguers, it'll probably come up.
Well, it sounds like a voice we certainly need to hear more of. Hey, Ken, thanks for all your amazing work, you and Evandrelic and everybody on the MLB team. Hopefully, we're going to have games to talk about here real soon, but we got some work to do. Thanks for being on the pod, and hope we can bother you again pretty soon as this thing gets moved forward. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks to Ken Rosenthal for joining us today. This is The Comeback presented by The Athletic. Please be sure to follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you access your podcasts as we track the major issues surrounding the return of sports in the weeks ahead. Thanks for listening, everybody.